something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
How tall are celebrity masks?
Did Def Leppard use 187 backup vocalists?
And is it possible that 1983 is the best year ever for music? That's all coming up right now on TNT.
Hey, bud.
There he is.
Guess what? 1983. It's episode 283. But 83 had some classics, including this safety dance.
Maybe the best year in music history, if you listen closely. Okay, wait. What version of the song
This is the dance remix, which has all the stuff, the original remix, which I thought didn't exist with these parts, but it actually, they are that ridiculous.
Okay, but tell the buds how you found out that there
was a dance remix. Texted, DM'd on the TNT account saying, hey, check the scene in Hot Tub Time Machine. And that's in the background of the scene when they find out it's actually 1980, whatever. That's the background track and is the safety dance remix.
In Hot Tub Time Machine.
In Hot Tub Time Machine. So I thought it was pretty funny that it reminded me back that it just made truth that that's the real parts of the song. I thought that was just like so kind of like, I don't know, 8-bit music styles. Like, let's just come up with something while we're taking a loaf.
I'm sure that's how the conversation went. So did they make the remake of that song for Hot Tub Time Machine?
No, that was came out in the 80s. So in that scene, everything is authentically 80s, including that song, the safety dance remix.
Do I need to see that movie?
Well, this is 1983 jams, and that came out that year.
I know, but do I have to see Hot Tub Time Machine? It sounds like right up my alley.
I think you do, definitely, yeah, for sure. And seeing that clip, I was like, I remember seeing that movie and going, kind of, you know. But, I mean, maybe because it's been, the last 2 years have been such a bummer with not really comedies that are out. I saw the clip and I was like, it was pretty funny how legitimate the them looking around, and it's like it actually is the 80s. Mm-hmm. Like they slowly start to figure out, like, wait a second, why is everybody dressed like this? Is this... And looking at the TV, and it's like David Bowie doing an MTV commercial. You know, like it's... Everything is 1984 vibes. So eventually they're like, oh my God, what the hell's going on?
Man, I need to see that.
It's so ridiculous that it's like a hot tub and they get in it and everything changes. Like, that's pretty dumb. But it's worth a watch for sure for a laugh.
I found especially as things are so nutty now, to watch nostalgic movies.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, you've been watching a lot of game shows from the 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
It's comfort food, man. It's a grilled cheese and tomato soup.
It's for sure, man. It really is. It's escape at its best. And then, I mean, if you're talking about music in 1983, that there's so many like Uptown Girl.
It's a great song.
That was a massive... Like, if you think of just hits, okay, and then Hungry Like the Wolf.
Unbelievable song.
Sticks, Mr. Roboto. I mean, it might not be your favorite jam, but like... It was a hit song, and it was big, right?
Dude, it was huge. I remember listening to Mr. Roboto on a ghetto blaster during recess at Sherwood Elementary School.
It's like a rock, one of those goes all over the different, there's movements in it. Here we go.
Yeah, it's got a Queen energy, right?
Well, it's, I guess it's their chip away at pop, at prog rock. I don't know. Okay, they also had this classic, Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top.
Not a fan.
No, that's not my point, really. That song was big, is what I'm saying.
It was very big.
Especially
not a fan
them
of that song.
Them at the side of the road with the point in the fingers.
Yeah.
And it was always like women getting out of the car with them like all greasy.
Yeah, I was never really a fan of ZZ Top for some reason.
Well, why would you be, honestly? It's like if you're into like all these like pop jams and like other songs and new wave, and then there's these three dudes in a 50s car with like dirgy rocks, disco beats.
Did Synchronicity right? come out in 83?
Like, it's, I like ZZ Top. I think great, they were great. And Billy Gibbons is great, but still, yeah, I gotcha. What'd you say?
Did
what come out?
Did Synchronicity come out in 83?
Yeah, there's some good Police records out. Well, there's Jeopardy. Remember that song? There's also like
what? No, I remember the Weird Al parody, but I don't remember the actual song.
Culture Club, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? I mean, that was a jam. Boy George, man, that guy was massive.
Yeah, Synchronicity came out on June 17th, 1983. My sister was into the Police in a big way, so that's what I listened to as well. Come On, Eileen was a jam and a half.
Sweet Dreams, like by Eurythmics.
Eurythmics. That's peak, like.
That was big.
That's peak Sam on Video Hits years.
Yeah, how about the Total Eclipse of the Heart?
Yeah, banger. Great song.
It's kind of like Meatloaf vibes.
Did Against All Odds
right?
come out in 83? No, it was 84.
Did Todd Rundgren produce that? No. How about, Billie Jean is also...
Man, 83 had some bangers.
It's a lot. It's a lot of hits in one year.
It's a lot. A lot I mean, of songs even, that we even, still play.
Even David Bowie had this.
Let's Dance?
Yeah. Right?
Are you a Bowie fan?
Little known fact, I don't know if you know this, but you know Stevie Ray Vaughan's playing guitar on this?
No way.
Yeah. You can kind of tell whenever you hear it. With that cold, steely tone. Oh, this is sax off the top here. Let's get to the guitar. Here we go. Here starts.
Oh yeah, right.
It's like, just do something over this. Isn't that funny? How you hear it when you hear that guy on there. You're like, oh, he's literally probably just gone over it a couple times. Okay, roll it. Let's do it.
I was thinking about this the other day. If you're at the top of your game in pop music, and another artist that is maybe on the way down is like, we should do a collaboration, it must be really uncomfortable if you're like, no, man.
Well, if you're trying to... Well, that's kind of what everything now is. You mean like featuring other artists on songs?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Just
so,
like getting younger...
So Kid Laroi, is this big pop artist right now. He comes out with a couple bangers, and then Justin Bieber's like, "Hey, I'm gonna collab on one with you," and that's probably an example where he was like, "Sure, that would be great." But in some cases, I bet someone's like, "Yeah, like Journey would be like, yeah, we should do a thing." Like, if you don't want to, how do you say that?
Well, I think nowadays everyone's doing it so much, collaborating, that you kind of have to, in a sense.
And you can't say no, it's rude.
There's probably lots of saying no going on. That's because it's happening so much. But back in the day, it was more kind of low-key, where it's like, you don't even know it until somebody tells you. Like, you wouldn't... Like, I don't remember everybody saying that Bryan Adams is on Don't Forget Me When She's Gone. Like, it's a part... Like, wasn't in the song featuring Bryan Adams, right? It never was.
Or was Rod Stewart on My Town with Glass Tiger.
Yeah. You just kind of hear them all of a sudden burling in there.
So how does that work? Like, if you're Bryan Adams, or let's say Rod Stewart, and you're doing a Glass Tiger song, do you charge? Or are you like, you know what, man, I'll do that for
free? No, usually it's like, I just poked my head in the studio and did the quick. You know what I mean? Like, they were across the hall, one of those stories. Popped in and did it.
Did you guys have any, like, yeah, Alanis actually sings backups on whatever.
not to my knowledge, but I know, like, we use, like, samples. Like, we have claps on, I think, Innocent, that are the same claps from We Will Rock You, like, the same exact sample.
No way.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Bob Rock had, like, all the raw stuff, like, all these classic samples of...
Like, how didn't songs. They say all the audience laugh tracks are from the 60s? Like, still to this day, they use the same recordings? Yeah.
Yes.
There's one guy, like...
Yeah, and the rest is just like... From 1947. And when it's really bad, like the Big Bang Theory, you can tell they're just pounding every 2 seconds.
We often, when we're driving somewhere in the car, everyone gets to pick a song, so you go around the horn. But today, Indigo was like, you know what, Daddy, why don't you pick the music for this drive? And I was like, all right. So I feel pressure to instill them with as much music knowledge and history as possible. So we went down a Beatles wormhole, and I was, playing from their earliest stuff and their most complicated stuff, and... I was playing A Day in the Life, and you know how George Martin told everyone in the orchestra to play the lowest note in their instrument to the highest note over whatever it is, 16 bars or something?
Yeah.
It's so exciting when something like that lands, and they're like, that's cool.
You can hear him counting it in the background.
No way, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's like, oh, like he's got it, because they only had so many tracks. So when they were doing that, he had to count. So you can hear him counting, like, so it works out or whatever. Yeah, they did so much, like, ridiculous stuff back in the day. For loops, for example, you know, like that song Money on Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
Like the don't bonga don't go dang, dung, slang, slang. So, like, all that, those sound of loop, the change and all that. They use that by, like, taking mic stands and from the tape machine, elongating the tape reel around all these mic stands. So the loop in 7, it had to be in 7/4 time, which is an odd time signature. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Like, so the loop goes around the room and they played to it, right?
No way.
Yeah. Like so many ridiculous things back in the day when they were cutting tape and making it work just from tape reels.
How do you know pretty what 7/4 time is if you're self-taught? Like that's intense theory, isn't it?
Well, you hear the riff that don't down go don't 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 go don't 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 like the riff, like you hear whatever the riff is and you get used to that cycle of time coming around again, right? So you literally just you have to just get used to it. Yeah, even if you know it technically and understand the time signature or what it is, it's still, you have to get your head around it with a feel, and you have to be able to play it right in that regard. And odd time signatures, you generally have to have, like, it has to be kind of a hooky thing in your head, like, I don't know, like Take Five by Dave Brubeck. It's like boom ding da ding 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 ding. Like you, it has to be kind of a hooky thing that you can feel, right? If it's not, if it's like 1 2 3 4 5 and just there's not a something to hang your hat on rhythmically, then it's a lot more difficult. But anyway, it's just interesting how people used to use whatever they could to make loops, the beginning of what became loops and sounds and synthesizers and all the different echoes and reverbs. And
so it's crazy. You, when you're drumming, do you count in your head?
No, you just feel the cycles of time.
But you're not actually counting numbers. You're not going 1 2 3 4 5 6 7 1.
No, you just feel, you either learn the structure from playing it a lot, or you feel, if you don't know the structure a lot, you have to know how many measures there are. So you just feel like 4 bars. I can kind of feel if it's going to repeat a few times. I can feel the repeating 4 bars in my head. You know what I mean? Like I can feel that cycle. So I don't have to think about the individual bars. I can kind of feel the bigger ones.
Is that innate or is that something learned?
I think you have to play a lot to start to have that feeling of longer time. Because if you're just sitting on a practice pad, like four bars as opposed to 8 bars or 16, everything's a lot smaller because you're not really playing long patterns. But once you start playing sections of songs and things where you're repeating the same groove for 32, 64 bars, whatever, you start to feel, instead of every 4, every 16 or every 32 is kind of a cycle that you feel, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that comes with just kind of playing a long time.
Crazy.
But that helps, though. Because otherwise you are kind of scared in terms of how long stuff is. You know, usually you'll remember like, okay, there's like 4 16s. And then there's like 2, because one of them has a weird ending or it's going into another part or whatever. So you remember that little section of change that happens after 4 repeats or something, 2 repeats of 16 or 32. Everyone's like, what the fuck are you guys talking about right now?
I know. It's so inside baseball, but it's also really interesting. one of your other interests is golf. I had an interesting experience today at the airport. I took a flight to Chicago, and there was a group of girls who were Wisconsin softball players, and then there was a group of dudes who were Notre Dame golf team guys. Like wearing their Notre Dame whatever uniforms. Mm-hmm. And one of the Notre Dame guys was like, hey, are you you're that guy from Mr. D, right? And of the things I've done, that's not something I get recognized for very often. Yeah. And I said, yeah, I am. And the guy said, I'm from Truro.
No
way. I was like, no way. So his name is Owen Mullen. Talked to him for 20 minutes. He's a freshman on the Notre Dame golf team. He's from Truro.
Good for him.
His home club is Truro Golf Club. And as a freshman, they have to qualify to get to play in the tournaments. There are 9 guys on the team and only 5 get to play in the tournaments. he's qualified already. He's playing in the tournaments for Notre Dame. So you can imagine I had like 7,000 questions for him. Like, how does that work? Do you get scouted or recruited, or do you have to try out, or do they just go by your numbers? So one of the coaches is from Canada, Toronto. And so Owen was on his radar, and he came to watch him play a couple times. And Owen's really ranked high in Canada. Mm-hmm. And he's played with Pendy a couple times.
Nice. Did he play in that tournament that was there recently with the Canadian Tour? Wasn't that at the Truro Golf Club last year or the year before?
Oh, yeah, right. Where was he? Was in Enfield or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if he played in that. I don't know if he played in that. He's a freshman, so he's 18 years old.
Yeah, no kidding.
He was scouted by five schools and picked Notre Dame in part because their athletic program is so good. And I was like, what is life like for an athlete at that level? And he said, basically, we go to school Monday to Thursday, and then we travel every weekend. And you think about
moving around.
I was actually saying this to him, like, you come from a place like Truro where the golf season is 2 months long. Imagine the head start that guys that grew up in Florida have. So the fact that he came from Truro and is doing really well on the Notre Dame team says a lot about his talent. Yeah.
And he does, for sure.
He said he was like really into it from the time he was like 8 years old, like really committed to going to school in the States. So I was just Googling him, and he's like the number two ranked player in Canada for the class of 2021.
There you go. So let's keep an eye on him.
I know. And I said, are you going to the show? And he's like, yeah. Yeah, I think I am.
That's right. He's going. That's it. That's good. I love it.
But what an interesting life for an athlete. I was like, does the golf team at Notre Dame have like big man on campus kind of swag? And he's like, well, honestly, the football team is really good. So those dudes do. But it surprised me. Only 8,000 people go to Notre Dame. And the golf team is also pretty good. So he's like, we do okay, you know. But on weekends when they go like to Orlando to practice, they keep it pretty low key. He said the coaches expect a lot of us, and we have to do our studies. And if your GPA drops, like, you're off the team. So it's pretty serious business. They don't get to get loose the way you might expect.
Well, good for him. Let's hope he keeps burling on up the charts.
I'll say. I love meeting youngsters who are focused and have big dreams. It's great.
How about this jam from 1983?
Standout Ballet, true. Later remixed by
PM Don.
PM Don, yeah.
Yeah.
Camera pans, memory, a cocktail glass behind a blind of plastic plants. Never in one sentence has more of a scene been set. This was a super turbo jam. Like maybe the sock hop at Sherwood Elementary School.
Song's like freaking like 7 minutes.
That is some weird time signatures too.
Yeah, there's like a little breakdown at the beginning.
This is the music of my people, big time.
This dramatic singing never did it for me. I just always thought it was funny for some reason. I don't know why.
It's the extra air dump, the soul.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just something about it. Same with like, I don't know, like in the news last week there was this. Eddie Vedder was talking about how he went to like he couldn't handle Motley Crue in the 80s, and I was like, I know that feeling, like, because I just thought it was they were cheesier. There's cringiness to the like girls and smoking in the boy, like there was like a kind of like the headbanger dude at your school that's like hacking darts and not paying attention, like that to me, like I'm like, why would you want to celebrate that?
Well, I think... And
anyway, Eddie Vedder said that in the press, that he never got Motley Crue, and he was glad that I guess kind of Kurt Cobain, in a sense, single-handedly ended that kind of hair rock with the, you know, going out with lipstick and hair puffed up and sprayed and eye makeup and going out there and just drinking a bottle of Jack Daniels and like just getting all banged up and smashing your hotel room and doing rails all night. Like, it's just whatever salad, man. You know what I mean? So like they came back, Motley Crue got all pissed off, and Nikki Sixx was like, oh, they're just boring band anyway. One funny thing he did mention, he's like, well, they're just a brown-haired band for brown-haired fans. And I was like, that's pretty funny, man. Calling them brown hair rock. Like,
bunch
that's,
of brown hairs.
Brown hair rock.
That's like, the weirdest diss ever.
That's pretty good, man. That's all pretty solid by Nikki Sixx. Brown hair band.
That's such a weird diss, but oddly accurate.
It stings, so yeah, because it's true.
Did you say it stings?
Yeah, it's fair. It's like when the first time I heard "Mad at Your Dad" rock when someone was talking about Mitt Nickelback. Like, just the phrase, mad at your dad, rock, like, it really kind of stings, like, if it's true, you know what I mean? Like, if you have, like, four songs going off about how much of your dad's dick.
But at the same time, like, Def Leppard, that's, they're what? Sort of in the same category, but that music really resonated yeah. with me.
Well, Def Leppard, yeah, Look Photograph is 1983, man.
Yeah.
Like, and that's Mutt Lange, right? So that's different. Like, that was really, really heavy-duty pop songs. And hooky, too.
Oh, interesting. And
they weren't, like, they were kind of like pop AC/DC, in a sense, right? With huge choruses, right, with like 48 people on backup vocals, right?
Yeah. I just texted you a picture of Joe Elliott from Def Leppard lately.
Listen, that's not many people singing this part here. There's like 47 people. It's like, no wonder it sounds like a party. It's like arena rock. Because like it'll sound normal when the whole crowd's singing along.
You could never recreate that with two dudes and Mike.
No. Imagine the tracks. It's like two boards connected to each other. Mm-hmm. And then it's like mixing down seven vocal tracks to one track. And then having like 20 of those.
I just texted like, you a picture of Joe Elliott that we have to use for this week's episode.
Okay.
Face like a half-chewed caramel. Big, God love him.
With the big, like, super six-pack and no shirt on?
No, that's Phil Collin.
Oh, that's right.
I read his autobiography. He's, like, vegan and stuff. This guy is the singer.
No, Joe Elliott. Yeah, I know. He's looking a little
Merle bit Haggard.
Bloody Mary mornings.
But there's, those songs resonated for me. In my early teens, they got me fired up, like going to soccer games and stuff. Like, I listened to them a lot.
Yeah, those couple records.
Like, Motley Crue was funny, but Def Leppard was like, yeah.
Pyromania and Hysteria, those two records, probably, right?
Hysteria is a great song.
Yeah, those ones, they got like, it's so thick.
Yeah, it's thick. And love.
Thick as a brick.
Love hurts? Love Bites.
Love Bites. Which is like the ultimate.
Slow dancing to Love Bites?
No, that's like the ultimate like strip joint jam.
In the 80s. Yeah, when was that? When was Love Bites? That was no, 80.
It's like a year before or after 83, literally.
When you make love.
Let me see. I'll get it going for you. We've had fun with that because it's...
Oh, that was 87.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a Donovan joint, right?
For sure. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, this has got more more production.
It was later in the 80s.
So this one has even more backups, right? Like, even the guitar sounds like there's like four of them.
Oh, we've done this with Phil at our live shows.
Yeah, for sure. What's up with I want to hear once everything kicks in here. It's a slow burn here. Yeah, here we go. The eight vocals.
It's like 60 dudes doing backup.
Yeah, alrighty. Yeah, there's like 17 vocals just on this, and this is the verse, right?
Yeah, it's not even the chorus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Lord of the Rings army, like from the top of the mountain when it shows everybody coming. Like, that's how many people are singing right now.
Lord of the Rings army.
You just like a sea of orcs. Yeah, man, that's some production right there.
I'll say. Let's take a break, bud.
Yeah, let's take a break. Another 1983 jam.
Blue Eyed Soul, man.
And little John Oates.
Does Daryl Hall get the credit he deserves?
Yeah, sure he does. But does John Oates?
Yeah, John Oates does.
I think these guys are getting more cred than ever. Because of the resurgence of yacht rock. And
listen to this right here, though. Listen to this line.
Second, they just did another double verse here. You think he ever told John to get lost? Like, I'm just gonna do this. Go home.
Just take it back to that first line.
I don't know what you mean. Like in the verse?
Yeah, take it back 20 seconds.
Okay.
Right here. Even that line, the sneaky runs in there.
Oh yeah, lots of vibes. He's feeling it. He's a great singer.
Great singer. What do you think the dynamic is between Hall and Oates?
I don't know, man. Probably fine. They still do stuff together, I think.
But do you think Oates was ever like, you know what? I'm going to do a solo record.
Yeah, for sure.
But what would that even be?
I could see him be like, fuck you, I'm out.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? Go ahead.
He's just going to just do it, being Oates.
Like, so it's a record Oates. With just backup fuck singing?
It'd be Oates over here. Oats like, can still play.
Would you buy Oats an Oats record?
I don't, well, okay. Here, let me see if there's John Oates jams here. Give him John Oates. John Oates.
Like the John Oates solo project?
Yeah, man, he's got songs.
No.
Here we go. Yeah, man. Let's go.
It's Sugarland all over again.
Well, hold on. I don't want to... Like, there's a lot of... sketchy. Okay, are these real records or?
I really want to hear an Oates song.
I want to hear one like the old. I guess
there's no melody, just harmonies.
Okay, hold on. This is 70s. Oh no, this isn't him.
That's Hall and Oates.
Just like, it's Hall and Oates is what I'm saying. I'm trying to find one just him. Okay, this is him, but this isn't... To be fair, this is from the 2002. Nice little riff there. Alright, it's that kind of music. It's
who's singing like, that?
I think that's Oates.
Okay. I can buy that.
Red is the color of love.
Bad is the color of love.
God, let's go to dance.
Back in some numb.
Gonna make it with the baby. Like, it's kind of like if you walk into a bar somewhere and that's what's on there. It's like, these guys are pretty good, eh? Sounds great. That kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
I do. I buy the Oates record. Stuff.
That one? Color of Love?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, you wouldn't buy that.
So I'm in a suburb of Chicago. I'm staying at the Harrington Inn and Spa.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's a 40-minute drive from the airport. I'm doing a show. And
so it's one of those places where everything's in the hotel?
No, it's not at all. It's the Harrington Inn and Spa, and it's one of those maps with brass beds, and there's a fireplace in my room.
Oh, okay.
And I went down to the bar, and the woman working there was very kind and recommended a rye I should try. And it's called Angel and Envy. And I got a two-banger to take up to my room, and I think she poured them really stiff.
Oh, they're stiff. So it's
they're stiffies.
Could be like a six-banger.
Yeah, it's like a six-banger. But there were just two of them. So Angels and Envy is a really nice rye. And I said, can I have Angels and Envy and Diet Coke? And she was like, I don't think you want to do that. And I was like, why? And she said, well, to be honest, it's a really nice rye. And you're kind of ruining it with Diet Coke.
But you're like...
Well, I was like, well,
I know. We all know that. Everybody knows that.
I was like, I want to appear fancy, but also show you my true colors.
Yeah. So you got to break it down with something. So yeah. What did you do? Just pour a Coke in it when you got back to the room?
No, she did it.
Oh, okay.
Because I just came clean. I was like, I know. I want to take something really nice and then ruin it.
It's okay.
So you can see who I am.
No, exactly. But you also, you don't want to do the big hot rocks, right? It's just ripping it off the rocks.
Gibraltar, one big chunk of ice.
Big burning throat. Gack.
Gack. Gork gack it down.
I like the resurgence of Gork gack coming back on Twitter.
It has happened, hasn't it?
To Ricky. Well, I just remembered how ridiculous that was by seeing it again. Of the Gork gack getting Gork gacked.
And just so the buds have the scene set, it's Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And you watched the halftime show. How was it?
It was good. The Rams won, the LA Rams. But the halftime show was like Dr. Dre and kind of, I guess Brett artists that he kind of brought out in a sense, in terms of either producing them or helping them get produced or being a big part of their first whatevers. And so it was like, obviously Snoop Dogg, Mary J. Blige, Eminem, 50 Cent, and Kendrick Lamar, if I'm not, I think that was everybody.
So was it a crazy medley?
It was a big crazy medley, and showing the span, I guess, of Dre's production career, in a sense. So yeah, it was good. It was entertaining, you know, as a halftime show should be. And it was nice to hear those songs because they're all good jams. And that's, you know what I mean? Like, Anderson .Paak was playing drums there.
Oh, that really? Was cool.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a lot of really cool moments. There was another great kind of live band. I don't know who was playing in the live band.
Oates.
If it was Kendrick Lamar's band. Yeah, Oates. But still, it was a great show. And probably one of the better ones I've seen, for sure.
People were saying, and this is just a little poll on social media, but it seemed like people thought Prince was the best ever, and this is the second best, but close.
Yeah, Prince is always going to be the best, no matter what, and I agree. You can't top a Prince performance.
I'm going to throw out a surprising... halftime show, Bruno Mars.
Did you like that one?
Yeah.
Wasn't that with someone else?
Can't remember.
I can't even.
But I also know Lady Gaga I thought was incredible, and I wouldn't classify myself as a little monster or whatever her fans are, but I thought for energy and enthusiasm and creativity, that was pretty great.
Well, I mean, honestly, everybody's great at these things now. There's so much production that happens now. It's kind of, they're always entertaining. So what do you want, right? It's good. People dig that stuff, the big fancy headlining stuff. Have a good headlining laugh and enjoy it. Headlining music. You know what I mean? And then you watch the commercials with all the headliners in it. Like, that's the only thing that's... Remember back in the day when it was like, wow, Michael Jackson walking down a set of stairs. That was like the big $30 million commercial. And because like, wow, it's a totally normal commercial, but because it's a superstar in it. Like Cindy Crawford at the Pop Machine, remember?
Yeah,
like,
huge.
Yeah. Now it's like these superstars, but they're doing something too now. It can't just be the fact that it's Seth Rogen eating a Doritos on the couch. Seth Rogen has to be like, you know, on the side of a building in like a Marvel type thing. You know what I mean? It's so over the top.
Is that actually one?
No, but I'm just saying, like the production values in the commercials. It's not just enough to have a superstar in the commercial. It has to be some hook to it as well.
Yeah.
They don't show you all the good commercials up here. And we get the Bloxies. So you end up seeing the same 10, like, CIBC... excuse me, CIBC ads or whatever. I saw one, I think, Arnold Schwarzenegger as, like, Thor or a god. I don't know. That one was all right. But still, like, exactly. Like, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, throwing electricity around like it's no big deal with his fingertips.
Whatever.
You know what I mean? I don't know. The ads now have to be out of control. Like,
well, plus, they kind of released them a few days beforehand.
It was all crypto again, probably, right?
Yeah, Bitcoin went crypto. Ads.
How's your crypto doing, bud?
Haven't looked in weeks.
Yeah.
Haven't even looked. I don't know. Do you want me to look right now?
Yeah. Look, it's that easy? You just look?
Yeah. Well, you download the app, bro. And every day...
Dude, buy the dip, bro. Buy the dip.
Every day I get like, hey, just so you know, this is really, you should buy this right now. Oh, it's up a bit. There you go.
It's up a bit. What is it? Is it the Eurythanium or is it like the Bitcoin or is
no,
it
I'm
one
down.
Of those ones?
Overall, oh, I'm down. But I bought some Ethereum.
Yeah, Ethereum.
And I bought some Ripple.
What the fuck is that? And you got like a 2.5% of an ape NFT.
Yeah, exactly. That just cost 100K. But yeah. I have every reason to believe it's going to go through the roof.
There's like 17, like the size of a king mattress of hard drives just Berlin now. Too?
Yeah.
Just because of the transaction.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so abstract.
The more I try to understand it, the less I know about it, to be honest.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
I've had some people like, hey, dude, you want to find out about this? And they start talking about it, and I know it makes less sense. But what were you saying? The Olympics? Have I been watching that?
Yeah.
A little bit. I can't believe the jumps, man. Like the snowboarding. It's like, remember when you're a kid playing video games of the snowboarding games back in the day? Now that's what the real snowboarding is.
I know.
Where they're flying in the air like it's so far. It looks so dangerous that it's like, I can't believe it. Everything.
I know.
The difference.
We were watching the women's ski jumping.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then they're like, oh yeah, she's 17.
Yeah.
What?
No, I know.
How do you figure you can do that by 17 years old?
You're at like the Red Bull camp where you're doing it into like a huge... massive thing of foam cubes, one of those deals, like for 10 hours a day. That's how it is, I guess, right?
I don't know.
At the pipe, working it.
I don't know how you get that far by 17.
I know, right? Because it's one of those things where you have to get hurt before you get good, in a sense, if you're falling a bit. So it's like, oh yeah, I got a cast on my leg here because I was trying to do this really hard move. So I'm going to get back at it in 6 weeks.
Well, I think about that with figure skating.
Right, yeah.
Like, how many doubles do you not land before you actually land one?
I know, yeah. I don't know. What I don't understand is like how they just can get better and better and better. Like I saw some dude ripping down a hill on the racing, like in 1976. You know, like this, just burling down the hill. It was like color, but it's like his legs were flying. He was like barely staying up, going out, like every corner, like fly, like looked like he was about to fall off the whole time. You know what I mean? Like. One leg's way higher than the other down a hill, and then the other one, he's like skidding across, and like literally, like as if you just had never done it before, and you're going down the hill. But if you fall, you die, and you can't stop. Like,
you have to be fearless.
Yes. Like, but now you see them going down there, they're not really moving as much. The speed is more, though. But back in the day, the skis are all moving around and the boots look like they're like getting loose.
Poles Alberto
are all
Tomba.
Going everywhere.
Remember La Bamba?
Or Steve Podborski.
There are a few like Eddie the Eagle Edwards. Do you remember the Olympics where Eddie the Eagle Edwards? He was the
where
only
was
ski
sleeping.
Jumper from England.
Yeah, and he was sleeping under the jump.
Yeah,
remember?
And he was terrible.
Because he didn't have a room. Yeah, it was no good at all.
What do you mean he didn't have a room?
Yeah, I remember, like, he didn't have a room book, so he was sleeping under the ramp. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe that's where he did that back home or something ridiculous. There's a movie about him.
Eddie the Eagle?
Yeah.
John Oates did the soundtrack for it.
John Oates did it, yeah. John Oates had a fall in the mid-80s after a split with Daryl Hall, and he was stealing hubcaps in Chicago until 1989 when he reconvened.
By the way, you should not feel bad for John Oates.
John Oates is
just fine.
Yeah, I heard he like spent all his money on islands and private jets and had to take it easy.
John Oates' net worth is $60 million.
There you go.
He's doing all right. Daryl Hall's net worth?
Are you?
$70
million. Really?
Like, why is that fair?
It's more. Like, what's the diff? Well, who knows? I don't know what John Oates did. I'm not versed. We should look it up sometime. Let the people know if he was a heavy contribution. I guess it doesn't matter.
This is shocking, because I just Googled net worth. Bruce Springsteen is worth $80
million. Yeah, those are all bullshit, those things.
But so John Oates is worth $60 million and Bruce Springsteen's only worth $80
million? Yeah, it seems like Bruce Springsteen made $80 million like last year.
Yeah. Hall & Oates sold 40 million records.
Where's Oates getting that dough? What's that about?
He's a producer.
Yeah, right. Producing, like, what? That's what they say, producing, but if he's getting $60 million.
Oh, you see, maybe. He's
producing Colombian cocaine.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, you got it?
Daryl and I knew we were going to be musicians for the rest of our lives, and the only way for us to be musicians for the rest of our lives was to keep our S together. But the band suffered their own issues in the form of money mismanagement. John Oates says he slept with thousands of women. Thousands.
What does that have to do with anything?
I'm sure it was thousands. I've lost track.
And then what, he spent all the money doing that?
As for how he did it, he explained, if you don't live through the 70s and 80s, if you weren't a rock star during that time, there's no way you can comprehend what it was like. There were no cell phones and people taking pictures of everything you did. There was no social media. It was much more innocent. I used to meet girls in various towns and sort of have a relationship. I might see them and then see them 6 months later.
So he had the big Rolodex coming through town styles.
Oates says he never had a drug problem. Coke was ubiquitous. Daryl and I never had our issues with it because we never did it. I tried it back in the studio 54 days, and it made me feel so uncomfortable that I couldn't do it. It just wasn't my thing.
He just liked to just pound.
Yeah.
That was his thing.
Yeah.
Sore back from the banging on the reg.
Wow. Oates put up some big numbers.
He did. Thousands of women, he said. Thousands. Not thousand.
Part of his fresh start was shaving off the mustache, which felt like shedding my skin metaphorically. I wanted to be a different person. I didn't want to be the 80s guy with a giant mustache.
Can you imagine the moment looking in the mirror, like watching that? Him, like, crying when he shaved it off.
He probably did cry.
And it's like, no, I know, but it's like, and it's like, oh, I'm going to shed this thing of where I pounded fucking 4,000 women and went around the world 5 times with a jet. Like, oh, I'm such a fucking idiot.
Do you think Oates was the consolation prize?
No, it's Hall and Oates, man.
I know, but do you think most people were like, Hall? No? Okay,
maybe. Oates. Sure, I don't know. Yeah, definitely, but still, doesn't matter. I don't know. Well, I guess because Daryl Hall is pretty fancy looking with the big hairdo and all that, and he's all tall, right?
Yeah, Oates is just a little guy. How tall do you think Oates is?
I bet you it was probably like a combo deal, but if they were that crazy.
What do you mean?
Like backstage, it was just doesn't matter. Come on in.
Oh, what a sin.
Yeah.
Oh, what a sin. Oh, dear.
When it's like normal like that, and it's no big deal, and it's like, that's what it's like. Like, there's, oh, you go in the door, and it's happening all the time.
Guess how tall Oates is, though. Guess.
5'4"?
Yes. Guess how tall Hall is.
6'2"?
6'1".
It's like Simon and Garfunkel, yeah, all over again, right? For sure. Except it's like the flip-flop on like how the popularity worked.
Guess how tall, right? Paul Simon is.
5'4".
5'3".
Yeah, he's tiny, man. Holy shit.
And guess how tall Edie Brickell is.
Oh, 5'11"?
5'9".
Holy shit.
Oh, wow. Oh.
We're having fun today.
We're having fun.
We're having good times.
These heights are interesting.
A Super Bowl Sunday. Yeah, of like what, combos?
Yeah.
Artists?
Art Garfunkel's 5'9".
That's it?
Yeah.
It looked like he was 5'50". Like 6'5".
I know.
Standing next to him.
Well, next to that tiny little mask. I'm going to Google short celebrities.
I think, yeah. Okay, how about this game? You got to tell me if you think they're tall or not, and we look it up. You're looking it up. You're good at it. So Lionel Richie. I got a feeling that he's like kind of tall, probably over six feet.
I think he's over 6 feet too.
So let's see.
Lionel Richie, height. Lionel Richie is 5'11".
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Respectable height.
There are a lot of celebrity women who are under 5'2".
There's a lot of celebrity men under 5'2".
No.
Sure. Isn't Prince like 4'9" or something? Prince was really short.
Lady Gaga, Kristen Bell, and the Olsen twins.
Billy Joel.
Bindi Irwin is 4'11". Wow, this is crazy.
Billy Joel is little. And sometimes they'll bump it up for the wiki. Like they're like 5'1", but they put them at like 5'7".
Yeah, with platforms on.
Yeah, like wrestling height. Like Vince McMahon just inflating everything.
This is fascinating. Jennifer Love Hewitt is 5'2". Okay, pick other celebrities. It's fun.
Billy Joel. I'm saying he's like under 5'5".
Okay, I'm going to say Billy Joel's 5'7". No, you're right. He's probably shorter than that. Billy Joel is 5'5".
Oh, yeah.
How tall do you think Elton John is?
It's 5'6".
5'8".
Man, I don't think that's true. I think he's lying about that one.
How tall do you think Eddie Vedder is?
I've stood next to him, and I think he's probably my height, 5'9.5".
He's 5'7".
He is 5'7"?
Kurt Cobain was 5'9".
I'm only 5'9.5".
Are you?
Yeah. What are you, 5'11"?
Yeah.
Yeah.
5'9.5", really?
Yeah. And a half. I really hang on to that half.
Fair enough. How tall is Dave Grohl?
I think he's probably like your height, probably.
Yeah, he's 6 feet. Chris Novoselic is crazy tall. 6, 7.
Chris Novoselic. Oh, see, Modern Love has more Stevie Ray Vaughan vibes.
Was that 83?
Yeah. Remember, we already played the other one from this record. Let's Dance. This is Modern Love.
Great song.
David Bowie, he was 5'7", probably, right?
Stand Maybe by. Taller. 5'10".
5'10", man. How about... Like, you got someone you think is wee?
Like Ewan McGregor, what do you have for him?
5'8"? No, 5'10".
5'10".
Could be sneaky, 5'10".
Yeah, 5'10".
Yeah. Had to change it. What about...
I don't know why this is so interesting to me. who else you got?
How about...
How tall's Rain?
I think he's 5'10".
Stand by.
Yeah, I think it's 5'10".
Is it?
Yeah.
Who's surprisingly tall?
What do you mean surprisingly
tall? Like, who have you met that you're like, that guy's tall?
Well, like we say, the Arkells are all tall.
Yeah, they are.
With the exception of Tony and Mike.
They are.
Man.
Tim's tall, and Max is tall.
Tim's very tall. I think Tim's 6'4".
Is he really?
Yeah.
The Rock is 6'5".
Is he?
Brad Garrett is 6'8".
Man.
Jeff Goldblum's 6'4". Vince Vaughn is
6'5".
Tallest
person I think I ever met was Randy Johnson. He's 6'11".
No way.
Yeah. He came on our tour bus and he's like bending down like he's a giant.
Ben Affleck is 6'4". Adele's 5'9".
You're just crushing it.
I don't know why this is so interesting.
What about Steve Perry from Journey?
I would think he's
What's your guess?
6'2".
Really? I'm going to say 5'10".
5'7".
Oh, he's sneaky gone. Little guy. He's little. See, all the singers are little, like Axl Rose. He's like 5'7".
Is he?
Yeah. Isn't he?
Stand by.
He's little. He's little.
5'9". There you go.
I bet you that's inflated.
You think he's shorter than that?
I feel like he's shorter than any Vedder, but yeah.
How tall is Slash?
You know who's tiny?
Who?
Is all of AC/DC. They were all
Oh, little. Are they?
Like little, super small, yeah.
Tiny little maps?
Tiny little maps. I was at
Tojo's
in Vancouver, sushi place. And they were all in there, and I was like, I couldn't believe how small they were.
Angus and Malcolm Young, 5'2 and 5'3.
Yeah, see?
Wow, that's
little maps.
That's like bordering on, you know.
Lil Maf.
Yeah.
Bordering on Lil Maf.
Good chatting, bud.
Oh, that's it? That's Sam?
That's it.
Okay, yeah. I'll say it. Bye.
Bye now.